Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine.
Plus global business, finance, and tech news.
The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
Denise talking about B of A's Brian Moynihan, profit topping estimates on trading net interest income. And then you had Goldman, Tim, profit slumping 33%. The company's CEO, David Solomon, pleading patience. We know we talked about it with Sri yesterday, Sri Natarajan. Just some of the changes that company is undergoing.
Well, let's get to our big bank roundup with us on the highlights and lowlights of today's reporting. We got Bloomberg News, America's finance team leader in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio, Sally Bakewell with us. Also with us is Cheryl Pate, Angel Oak Capital Senior Portfolio Manager, involved in managing several financial strategies, joins us on Zoom in Atlanta. Sally, give us your big takeaways. Where do you want to start?
So I think, Bank of America had a pretty good quarter by many metrics. Overall profit and net interest income topped estimates. It did better than expected in investment banking, you know, despite the persistent deal slump. And it did way better by a long way in trading, because the bank has actually, you know, spent a lot of time and in investment in expanding its balance sheet and in taking on more clients in its trading business. But Goldman, it was a bit of a different kettle of fish. Profit fell. It was hit by another quarter of real estate write-offs. And of course, it was impacted by sluggish investment banking, even though trading was better than expected. What was interesting is both banks sort of steered clear of, you know, making very decisive comments about when investment banking might bounce back, which they have done in previous quarters, perhaps indicating that those green shoots in investment banking they had long talked about might be pushed sort of further back on the horizon.
Birkenstock's not going to come out and save investment banking?
Probably not, okay. Even though they should do, given, you know, the wonderful sandals that I own. I think with the geopolitical concerns, and we know Jamie Dimon referenced those on Friday, he said it is, you know, this is one of the most dangerous times in history. So I think that's a big cloud over the investment banking.
And we know Goldman Sachs down about 1.7%. B of A actually up about 2.25%. I want to bring in Cheryl Pate. She's Angel Oak Capital Senior Portfolio Manager, involved in the managing of several financial strategies at the firm. She's on Zoom in Atlanta. So Cheryl, come on in. You know, it's interesting, and I'm just curious, as Sally went through the two big banks that reported today, we've heard from a lot of the big banks certainly last week as well. Is there anything that you've been hearing that's actionable for you in terms of investing?
Yeah, I think what we've seen thus far this earnings season has been outperformance relative to expectations. And I think across the board, we're seeing beats on NII and better than expected credit quality, which really have been the two points of concern as we look at bank fundamentals. Where do deposit betas go from here? They typically don't. They typically continue to rise until a couple quarters past the last rate hike. And credit quality has been something we've been expecting to normalize for quite some time. So we're encouraged with results. We're seeing less normalization, less quickly than we would have anticipated, and a lot of levers that banks are able to pull in terms of continuing to drive higher NII than expected. So what we really take away from this, I think, is the business models that work probably best in this environment tend to skew towards the large cap banks, where we have a bit of a balance between a really strong consumer still, and then on the smaller side of the spectrum, where community banks may be the only bank in town and continue to benefit from deposit flow stabilization. So we sort of like a barbell approach here, and we would be most concerned at the margin at some of the regional banks that skew relatively higher on commercial real estate and office CRE in particular.
What about, Cheryl, investment banking? When do you see investment banking bouncing back?
I think that is a difficult one. It clearly, we have seen better results than anticipated, but still down pretty heavily year over year. And it's difficult to see when that turn may happen. But one of the things that we do expect will start to accelerate as we move into 2024 is M&A, and particularly in the banking sector. I think there's a lot of focus that will be put on expense reduction, and M&A is a way to achieve that, particularly in the banking sector. And that could drive some higher investment banking fees as we move into calendar 2024.
Sally, you want to come back in terms of, we got, you know, obviously we heard from JP Morgan and Citi last week. We've really been kind of waiting to hear from these guys to see what they have to say, and women, about what they have to say about the health of the banking sector. Is there kind of a theme, a trend line? I know they're not all apples to apples.
Yeah, I think the trend line, the theme is that, so JP Morgan and Citi, they did see charge-offs increase, but they are still low compared to historic levels. And as we heard from Bank of America, it was a similar thing today. Charge-offs ticked up, but as we heard from Brian Moynihan, the consumer remains healthy, although spending is starting to slow. So again, it's a sort of ominous cloud that things are starting to deteriorate a little bit, but they're not quite reaching kind of pre-pandemic levels yet.
When you say not quite reaching pre-pandemic levels, would that be a good thing because it's a normalization, or would that be frowned upon?
I think it would probably be, well, they're probably be a good thing in the sense that they'd be coming back to sort of no one wants sort of credit charge-offs or write-downs, but I think if they're, you know, if they're bouncing off historic lows, it's less of a thing to worry about.
No, and yeah, that makes a lot of sense, right? But it is, right? We try to figure out kind of what's normal coming off the pandemic and then in comparison to where we were pre-pandemic. Cheryl, I asked you about Actionable. Is there names? And remind us of your strategy, because if what I remember, it's a credit or debt play as well as an equity play. But is there anything actionable off of the round of earnings that we've heard from the financial space for you specifically?
Yeah, and again, it's still a little early in the earnings season. We are encouraged by what we've seen so far. Our strategies tend to be more credit focused and more focused on sort of that smaller end of the cohort, 50 billion and below, where we do see actually quite a compelling risk reward opportunity, given the dislocation in the banking sector that still hasn't fully recovered from the volatility back in March. We're able to source in the markets today equity-like returns for fixed income investments. And so that's where we've been deploying the bulk of our dry powder, frankly, in this environment. On the back of what we've seen thus far this earnings season, most actionable for me, I think the ones that really are the standout banks thus far, I would highlight JP Morgan and Wells Fargo. JP Morgan continues to beat and raise, the fourth increase this year on NII, and a lot of benefit for, obviously, from First Republic as well, helping out in the results. And then on the Wells Fargo side, really a lot of excess capital and still some levers to pull on the expense side. So I think that's where we would see the most upside thus far this reporting season.
Cheryl, I think for Bank of America, it's been a bit of an outlier, largely because of its unrealized bond losses. And the bank has been sort of a lot of pains to say that it's very unlikely to need to sell these. They'll be held to maturity. They have plenty of liquidity anyway. I just wonder, what's your perspective on the fact that those unrealized losses did widen in the third quarter, and they absolutely dwarf those of, you know, the biggest US bank, JP Morgan?
Yeah, I think that has been the point of debate, clearly, on the stock. And, you know, given the yields in the bond portfolio has been an area of concern. I think when we look at sort of capital accretion that has taken place, and the fact that the portfolio gets shorter and you see maturities coming through, there's a way to sort of earn through this. And I think that was the takeaway that I had from today, but it remains a little outsized relative to peer group.
Well, a great roundup by both of you. So appreciated. Bloomberg News, America's finance team leader, who I guess is getting no sleep right now, Sally Bakewell, because it's like nonstop.
It happens quarterly.
I know, right? It's just like, it's like a major.
Yeah, it's quarterly sleep deprivation. Fine.
Here in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio. And our thanks again to Cheryl Pate out there on Zoom in Atlanta. She's Angel Oak Capital Senior Portfolio Manager. And as we mentioned, managing several financial strategies, but as she said, really involved in the credit side of things. You guys, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open only at Kings Island. For the fun of it.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern.
Listen on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, and the Bloomberg Business app.
Or watch us live on YouTube.
We're about to go on a little adventure together, and that adventure is going to span 17 years of music. How does that sound? Are you ready for it?
All right, everybody. Well, the adventure is definitely underway. The Eras Tour, right? The concert film released just last week, raking in more than $100 million in advance sales. That's expected to double within weeks. We just talked about that moments ago. We also have talked about just anything it feels like Taylor touches, Tim, just turns to gold.
It certainly includes the re-recording of her albums. And that brings us to a story in the current Screen Time issue of Bloomberg Businessweek. It's on newsstands. It's online at Bloomberg.com/businessweek. And of course, always on the Bloomberg Terminal. The story by Ashley Carman. She covers podcasts, the music industry, creators at Bloomberg News. She's with us right now in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker studio, along with the editor of Bloomberg Businessweek, Joel Weber. Joel.
Can we talk about Taylor?
Yeah. The answer to that question is always yes. I'm just waiting for the Screen Time.
Taylor who?
Taylor's Taylor edition. Yeah. Of Business Week.
Might be a thing. Look.
She would be a great guest editor. No offense, Joel. You're a great editor of the magazine.
If you can get Taylor Swift to edit this magazine, I will take the week off. maybe longer. What a force, right? And, just a little personal page out of my life. I'll be going to see this movie on Friday. Don't give away the ending. She's probably a billionaire.
Hold on. What's the occasion? This is great.
Friday night, and I could get tickets like 3 weeks ago, and I was like, I better book this now. So yeah, I will do this hit Friday, and then I will take my son and my wife to a movie called The Eras Tour. So what's incredible about this is that it just totally has taken, I think, pop culture and just like taken it to a whole nother level. Obviously, what she's been able to do at live shows is one thing. Now she's able to do it in movie theaters. But the best part, and as Ashley wrote in our Screen Time issue, is actually when you think about what she's done with albums, it actually sets up just how powerful of a force Taylor Swift actually is. So this is not a news story, but yet it's not nearly over yet, is it, Ashley?
It is not over. It is not over yet. So should we maybe back up and talk a little bit about what the situation is?
Let's do that.
Okay. I mean, I need to start at the beginning. I actually don't know how Scooter Braun got hold of the rights to this.
Right. So when Taylor was an up and coming, a known name, she was on a label group called Big Machine Label Group.
That was never a thing. She was always known.
Right. From the day she was born.
Yeah. How dare you?
Right, exactly. Eventually, Big Machine sold to Scooter Braun's management company. And so when they did that, Taylor's master recordings went with that deal.
And is this typical, like, artists are, don't have control over...
Yes.
These two versions of rights.
Yeah. So, okay. So the master recordings, which is the literal like recording of a song, that specific song in this case and in many cases is owned by her former record label. What they did not own, because she was a songwriter on all of her songs, is the composition. So that is, you know, the lyrics, the mm-hmm. notes, the melody, all of that. So that set her up when Scooter took over her records for the first, he received the rights for the first six albums that she put out. They have a very long history of not liking each other. It's definitely not worth getting into now.
She was vocal about it going into it.
She was very vocal about it.
Don't want this to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. She didn't trust him with these recordings. And so when that happened, she decided to kind of go with the nuclear option, which is to re-record all of these albums, and she can do that because she still has the rights to this composition. And so that's where
you know,
we are.
You know
today.
Who you don't want to see go nuclear?
Taylor Swift.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a shame they didn't do well.
Scorched earth.
Right. Yes. So she has been on this mission to re-record these albums. She's released a few already, and she's going to be releasing 1989. And you can tell when these are the re-recorded versions because in parentheses they'll say Taylor's version. That is set to come out later this month.
How different? Sorry, Joel. I keep cutting it.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. When it's Taylor Swift,
you're in charge. You're in charge. Scorched earth later.
How different? This is my last question, I promise. How different is the Taylor's version versus a, I don't want to call it Scooter Braun version,
you
but the Big
listened
Machine version?
And compare?
I haven't.
You just did a, you know, 20-year-old in your house.
What you wouldn't want to do is listen to the non-Taylor's version if you're a Swiftie, because
right. then you're,
you know, you're only listening to the Taylor version, right?
That gets into why she's been, I think, so successful. But as far as, you know, did she stick to the original recording style? Yes. Like, she has really tried to basically recreate those original albums. There's been a couple tweaks here and there, a couple lyric changes. She's released, like, new bonus tracks with different artists. So she's added on. But no, broadly speaking, like, these are meant to replace those original albums.
And she's done really well with them.
Okay.
Yes.
Tim's
done.
Been muted now.
I know.
Okay. Microphone off.
Right?
Okay.
She's done
but
really well.
But this is where, well, that gets to the heart of it, right? Because if you're on, say, Spotify, and you're going to listen to Taylor Swift, guess what album comes out first?
Mm-hmm.
It's the new ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
So every time she releases the Taylor's version, the old version goes lower and lower and lower, and you know, the guy that she didn't want to have control of anything makes less and less money on it.
Well, so actually, so Scooter no longer owns these recordings,
right.
We should say. Scooter sold them to Shamrock, and now they hold onto these. But regardless, I mean, she wants control of her own tracks, and
mm-hmm.
she has been extremely successful. I can tell you guys a little bit of a stat here. So as of July, one of her albums, Fearless, Taylor's version, had earned $1.47 billion on-demand song streams since its release. Okay? In that same amount of time, the original albums and the non-Taylor's version received $680.4 million. So obviously still substantial, but much, much smaller than what she's receiving on that new album. And then since its November 2021 release, Red, Taylor's version, had reached 2.86 billion on-demand streams, while the non-Taylor version earned 476.5 million.
That's a big difference.
So people are widely choosing to listen to Taylor's version. And kind of like what Joel was talking about, in some ways this has become almost an ethical conversation. Like, who are you going to support? This artist who has been mm-hmm. very public about her disputes over her rights and her ownership. Are you going to support her? Or are you going to support, you know, the investors who have bought this in different ways?
Well, I will say my daughter, who's been a fan for a long time, she'll be like, that evil Scooter Braun. Like, it's like, what? How do you even know who Scooter Braun is? And it's just interesting how she has really, as you say, it's an ethical decision in terms of what music you choose to play.
Has she written lyrics about Scooter Braun?
There is speculation.
There's a great history of Taylor going scorched earth on ex-boyfriends, you know, like Jake Gyllenhaal once had a career and then became a victim.
It's a great song.
Of some songs, right? Like, so there is this history. Has she gone there?
There is definitely speculation that some of the songs she has written are about Scooter. I don't know that she has ever confirmed or denied.
Yeah, no, I mean, neither with Jake Gyllenhaal either. It's just,
I just Googled kinda, that because I didn't know. Oh. 2010 they dated.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, yeah. Thank Jake you, Google. Right, not Scooter.
Where, Jake. Oh, are you
I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm
by the
just
way,
catching
where have you been?
Exactly. No, it is, but you know, we've been kind of laughing, not laughing, but I feel like we talk about the financial markets and Taylor Swift comes up. Like, it's just whether the economic impact, you know, we were all out at screen time on the West Coast. And how many conversations?
You know what people wanted to talk about?
Was Taylor Swift.
Like it's, and Beyonce.
And Beyonce, to be fair. One thing, though, that, you know, in terms of what you did, like, she can do this. Can anybody else do this? And other artists have tried.
Other artists have definitely tried. I'm sure we are all not familiar with Def Leppard's attempt to re-record some of their songs over.
I don't know. Oh, maybe you are. Are you?
I, no. No, I'm just nodding like I know what I'm talking
about. Check.
Yeah, okay. Def Leppard had tried to do this. Prince has tried to do this. Other artists have tried to do this, but I would say it's interesting because.
Not Taylor's version.
Yeah, they're not Taylor's version. And this is also uniquely a. Era of streaming. So in the past, you might have bought an album once, you had it on vinyl or CD or tape, and that was your copy of the record, and that's what you listened to. But now in streaming, you are constantly making a decision, which one do I want to listen to? And that totally changes the economics.
You know what else changes the economics? Being able to sell out stadiums for $1,000 a ticket. You know, like,
Phil,
like,
how come you didn't take your family to a Taylor Swift concert?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
and you're
I
taking
was,
him to a movie
I
instead.
I was able to buy three tickets for like less than 20 bucks each.
Instead of $3,000 for three tickets?
So let me do that math for you. And I was like, that'll be Friday night at a movie theater, good enough for the Weber household.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that this speaks to, though, is like if you're an artist now, you do those live shows and that is where the money is, right? Mm-hmm. But for Taylor, it's like all of these other things are also where the money is because she's such a force, right?
Right.
The other thing I love about Taylor, which is my last tangent, maybe.
Go ahead, Joel. He's
my
a huge
name
Swiftie.
Is Joel Weber and I love Taylor Swift.
I'm forced to listen to a lot of music.
Okay.
But she turns her vulnerabilities into the magic that drives her business.
Right.
That actually speaks to exactly what we're talking about with this Taylor's version. It's like somebody tried to pull a fast one on her.
It's a story, and it's a story that all the fans can participate in, and that gets down to even the friendship bracelets that we've seen people wearing to her shows. That came from a lyric that she wrote that fans read into and were like, oh, we should wear friendship bracelets in these shows. It is a participatory experience. It's not just one of fan and then artist and then a fan consumption. It's actively we're looking for clues from her.
Right.
You know,
like the Chiefs, right? Like,
there it is.
I can't. We didn't talk about the NFL.
We can't wait for the Travis Kelce song, right?
Oh my gosh!
Is there a chance that Taylor Swift could buy back the catalog?
I mean, at this point, she's committed so much time to the re-recordings, but I don't know.
Like,
maybe.
You do wonder
she's
about
got the
early,
money.
The right, really early stuff, which if you listen to her, right, she's got a different tone, certainly early on. So, like, you do wonder if at some point she wants to own that, where her sound was a little different, I'm just going to say.
Yeah, I mean, she has obviously, as we all have, aged, and voice changes over that time. So as much as she is doing what she can to make them identical, of course, there's always going to be moments where you can tell.
Is there any sense of like when the next releases will come out or what the sequence is? Is it always chronological or?
It is not chronological. So 1989 is next, and then I believe there are two more after that. And I don't think she has shared what that order will be. I for this story did go deep on Reddit, and there are some fan theories about what the order is and why. But
there's always theories, though, right?
Yeah,
there's always like all these things around everything she does in terms of her releases, right, or when it comes out, or the date and time. Like it's crazy.
Yeah.
Just gonna say.
So when are you gonna go to the theater, Carol?
Find me a babysitter. I'll go. Absolutely,
your job, not mine. But yeah.
Oh, I was gonna say thanks for the invite to the Friday Night Weber.
There were
household.
Three seats, not together. I was like, okay. Like,
are they really? You couldn't get seats together?
Mine's off in a corner.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, we just talked about that. How she's on her way to becoming America's youngest self-made female billionaire, and one of the few. I'm reading from the story. Magnet millennials. who hasn't made her fortune from meme stocks and cryptocurrency. But you do wonder, like, what's her next step? Like, her power in terms of philanthropy, because she has such an incredible stage, whatever she does.
Yeah. I mean, it really does feel like anything she's going to put her weight behind.
Not crypto.
She
famously was like, hard.
Yes.
Right, that's right.
She looks pretty good in hindsight. Right. You know what is so amazing?
She actually said no to it, right? Yeah. That's what's great.
She produces so much music. She writes so much music. She is.
That Tim hasn't heard.
Yeah, but I mean,
just kidding.
And she has so many collaborations with artists who I love too. I mean, she's prolific. It's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, her output is remarkable.
Yeah, no, 100%. And she tends to just drop these albums when you're least expecting them. And I think that also keeps the fans engaged. And she does elevate other voices as well. And has kind of, you know, we talked about Travis Kelce a bit.
Yeah.
Her new man, who is an NFL player.
I'm so glad she came along to help him.
Right.
Yes.
But, you know, you could just see the ripple effects from her presence on other people. She has been hanging, like,
NFL got cool real quick.
Right. Yeah. And she's been hanging out with Sophie Turner, who has her own marital things happening. But it's like she has been able to associate herself with the people she wants to and raise them up in a way that she wants.
I do feel like, you know, right, she kind of relates in this kind of crazy way. It's
Taylor Swift's world you just live in.
I'm okay with it. That's cool. I'm fine with it.
Really cool stuff. Ashley Carman, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Covering podcasts, music industry creators at Bloomberg News. And check this out. It's in the current issue of Bloomberg Business Week. Our thanks to Joel Weber. Fan, by the way.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open. Only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, TikTok, everybody. Just about 18 minutes.
TikTok. Can't believe it.
It's not 60 minutes. It's actually us.
And it's Tuesday. And we got less than 18 minutes till the market's closed today.
Yeah, exactly. An interesting day. We talked about the economic news, the move up in yields. That's really substantial once again. So let's get to it.
Yeah. Anna Arsov is global co-head of global banking at Moody's, joins us on Zoom in New York City. Good to have you with us, Anna. Thanks so much for joining us. Let's talk a little bit about just how broadly the sector is doing. I mean, we heard from the big banks today. We're seeing Goldman down, but Bank of America higher. What are you watching?
No, it was an interesting quarter. Look, the big banks are doing fine. You know, everybody has a little bit of a story. Happy to chat a little bit about Goldman or Citi, who has a little bit more storied credits. But overall, the big banks are very well positioned to brace for, you know, even more increased regulation. They're building capital organically. And they're really benefiting, particularly the universal banks, you know, looking from the results from JP Morgan and Citi and Wells Fargo last week and Bank of America today. I mean, excellent results from Bank of America. Net interest income still up, deposits stable, really gaining market share, particularly in the sales and trading business. So far from what we've seen, obviously Morgan Stanley hasn't reported yet, but really kind of winning in the capital market side, which is very good as well, without a single losing day. So definitely I would say JP Morgan and B of A leading the pack. Wells is doing well, you know, good capital accretion, you know, this year, this quarter. You know, Goldman, it's basically doing an unwind of some of the decisions on the consumer side, and that's going to continue. But what's more disappointing is that the continuing asset management kind of loss is related to commercial real estate. They're trying to restructure the asset management business to be more third party than on balance sheet. And that's going well in alternatives. They're really, you know, on target to raise that $250 billion, but there's still going to be some noise, both from, you know, the unwind of the consumer business and certainly from the asset management business restructuring as well.
So when you look, listen, what you do, it's so great to have you on a day like this when we're talking about the big banks. We got a bunch, obviously last week, a bunch today, and there's a lot more to come, certainly when we start to get into the regionals. But Anna, you also co-head Global Bank Rating over at Moody's. So yeah. When you look at the sector broadly so far, let's talk about the big
banks. She said they're doing fine. That's the official rating. Doing fine.
Can you just cross it off and just say, okay, we're good?
The large banks, you know, for sure. I think that what the regulators did post the financial crisis, it was painful for the U.S. bank to get to this, what so-called Jamie Dimon's favorite gold plating of regulation, but that really made them stronger. And they're capitalizing now. I mean, they were winning against the Europeans for a decade. And now with all this, a little more challenges that we're seeing on the regionals, the big banks are basically kind of the bright story. And, very different. Our expectations for the regionals, they're basically just start reporting, is that there's going to be a different performance on net interest margin because the big banks simply have that very, I mean, think about the premier deposit franchise at Bank of America or Wells Fargo or JP Morgan. Then they have to pay maybe a little bit up more for deposits,
right?
But nothing compared to what the regionals have to do.
So
things are well.
When you look at the regionals, are there anybody in particular, and I'm assuming you have to be a little bit careful, but is there anybody in particular that's kind of on your radar that you're keeping an eye out for that you think, you know?
I'll try not to mention specific names, but I think broadly.
You can if you'd like.
Yeah. PNC obviously reported was good results. Mm-hmm. Looking at the super regionals, you know, it's really interesting how, you know, USB, you know, performs and USB, you know, trying to see relative to PNC because PNC had very, you know, very decent results for regional peer group. And then it's going to be very important. A couple of things that we're going to be watching is how much the deposit stability is there. We look at the macro from a macro perspective, there is deposit stability this quarter. So we're not seeing some big, you know, deposit outflows or anything like that, but they're paying more for deposits. And there is this shift to CDs. And we're gonna see how much that is affecting in the net interest margin. We're expecting 2-3% lower net interest income, which is very different, as you know, relative to the large banks, which are actually, even JP Morgan, Jamie Dimon said, you know, look, we're still expecting, you know, accretion in our interest income. So there's going to be the divergence. We want to see commercial real estate. They're much more exposed. Typical regional bank has 180% of their tangible common equity in commercial real estate. Community banks are close to 3 times their tangible common equity. And we want to see if there is a divergence relative to what the big banks reported. CRE is going to be definitely an asset class to watch. The big banks increased provisions prudently, but there's not really a lot of credit costs related to CRE yet. So we want to see if there is a different story in the regionals. That's probably one of the most important things. And then thirdly is accretion of capital based on these new regulations that are coming. How are they going to do that in a more challenging operating environment?
How concerned are you about assets leaving regional banks, kind of what we saw earlier this year as a result of higher rates elsewhere?
You know what? It's probably not as much this year. It's going to be interesting what happens, you know, with the money.
Like it's already happened, you're saying?
It's already happened. Look, there was trillions of excess deposits that were created as part of the quantitative easing. Roughly around $800 billion have left. And, you know, they have left both from the big banks and from the small banks. Our data shows that the smaller banks departure of deposit really accelerated more after SVB. That doesn't mean that the big banks are not losing deposits either. It's just part of the quantitative tightening rather than confidence issue. But, you know, people and commercial entities particularly will look to diversify their deposit franchises, and the big banks have been beneficiaries.
Right. And we're starting, you know, as we often see, you know, we're seeing a bunch of debt issuance. PNC is among them. We saw that today. We've seen the big banks also doing it. We've seen a lot of debt coming to market, it's a good market for these banks to be doing it, and it makes sense at this point? Are the, again, you know, looking at the debt side of it, anything in particular that you're watching in terms of the reception in the marketplace among investors?
I think the investors a little bit, it's calm, you know, has calmed down from those very turbulent days mm-hmm. of the spring.
Yeah.
You know, there were obviously some outliers out there with significant interest rate risk that put a bad picture on the whole industry. But there is still $650 billion or so losses on banks' balance sheet. Mm-hmm. The good thing is that, you know, we have the lending facilities. There is no this imminent issue for banks to liquidate any of these assets, but it's gonna be a drag on banks' earnings. And I think that the investors are understanding which metrics they need to look at for what bank, you know, looking at deposit quality, looking at the NIMs, looking at exposure to commercial real estate probably is more important today than thinking about like run banks.
All right, we're going to leave it on that note. Anna, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Anna Arsov, she's global co-head of global banking over at Moody's, joining us on Zoom in New York City, but really an appropriate guest to have considering all of the banking earnings that we got today and really over the last week or so.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast, available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.